Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Oh, okay, everybody replied. So excited that I really liked your presentation because I was like, yes, that's what we're trying to do. So I work at Kentucky's second largest health department, local health department, and we were facing many of the same challenges that you talked about. So we had a lot of challenges, and basically what we had to do was think fast and on our feet and a wing and a prayer and say, how are we going to save our cessation program? Because as I kind of passively aggressively say, no one smokes in Kentucky, right? So I kind of don't like my title very much now because it sounds very dry, but basically what it needs to be is how we survived and how we kept trying to serve the needs of our citizens in Fayette County. So trying to tell you what we did. I have nothing to disclose at all. We have no money to put behind our program or myself. So, but the cessation program at Lexington Fayette County Health Department that I work at, Lexington's a town of about 300,000 people. It's not huge. It has a very rural, very old money kind of flavor to it, but there's a lot of very siloed, very strict barriers between the population groups. And for 25 years, the health department had been running a very good, solid cessation program. Had a very good history, but then the effort about 10 years ago was shifted to getting Lexington's smoke-free ordinance going, and they did that very successfully. We have a very comprehensive, very, very good, well-enforced smoke-free ordinance, but during that time, the cessation program died. When I came on 6 years ago, we had 8 people in our first cessation class that I had. I revamped the cessation program, and in my first class, I guess I kind of got a little too excited. We had 82 people. So, but we worked it out. We had very consistent graduation rates over the next few years. We averaged 80% or 50% graduation rates. And we didn't have full funding for our nicotine replacement, but we did have some funding from the state that trickled down from the federal level. And we were literally kind of sitting around one day. We were having a lot of problems with what we kind of term, and you probably know if you work in tobacco or other health promotion activities, we call them the frequent flyers, people who were coming in for 3 or 4 weeks, burning up our NRT, and then leaving. And we said, how can we fix this? And my boss and I kind of looked around, and he said, why don't we do a deposit program? And I was like, that's a really good idea. Let's use a carrot instead of a stick. So what we did was we provided the NRT, but we let them pay it out $10 a week. And then at the end, we did periodic CO monitoring. We begged, borrowed, and pleaded and bought a couple of CO monitors. And we would monitor every 3 weeks through the 12-week program. And at the end of the program, if they were clear on the CO monitor, they got their money back. So it became like the game. We called it the how low can you go. And it was very competitive. And so our success rates were very high. And they would do anything to stay in that class. And so that's why our success rates were very high. We worked very hard to do follow-up. We were one of the only programs in the state. We were very aggressive with our follow-up. We were very consistent with 25 to 30% follow-up rates, quit rates at 12 months. And in some groups, that was as high as 50 to 60%. And then all of a sudden, we lost our funding. My staff went from 4 people working full-time on tobacco to 1 person working on tobacco, which was me. So we had very high demand, and that was not high demand as far as people coming to our classes, but that was high demand from our priority populations, those very high need populations that you talked about, and that the CDC said, you have to serve them, you have to serve them because their smoking rates are so high. We had staff shortages that I spoke of, and we were not getting into those populations. Lexington has a very rapidly growing Hispanic population because of the horse farms and in the construction boom. We held 3 or 4 classes. I'm a native Spanish speaker. We have 2 native Spanish speakers on our staff that we had recruited. We trained to do our 12-week cessation program. No one showed up. We had many calls. They said, we're coming. No one showed up. We had over 100 people sign up. Not a single person signed up. So we did this 3 or 4 times. We tried to reach into the African-American community. No one showed up. So we knew that we didn't have the reach we needed. So we had lots of groups saying we need help, but we had no one showing up. So what we heard from the community was, your program's not working. The status quo isn't working. So we had a very drastic decline because people couldn't afford $100. And even though when they call, I say it's cheaper than cigarettes, that's not something that our population could use. And also, Kentucky's an expanded Medicaid state, which can be both a blessing and a curse, because we had a lot of folks who could not afford or couldn't use their Medicaid benefits to go get the NRT. They didn't need us anymore. Unfortunately, what that meant is they went and bought patches and used them for 3 weeks and said, oh, those things don't work, and then they went back to smoking. We have a very high enrollment rate with Medicaid in Kentucky because of our financial condition of our state. And also in the last 3 years, what's happened is when the e-cigarettes came onto the scene, I'm sure a lot of you have experienced this too, because I do know it's a nationwide trend. We have so many people who said, you know, I really want to, or I'm using the e-cigarettes now, I'm not smoking. And so what's happening is people are bouncing back from the e-cigarettes now, and they're coming to me and they're saying, you know, I'm not using that e-cigarette anymore, but it's taking 5 packs a day to meet my addiction level. And I'm saying, I don't know what we're going to do. We're going to, you know, so this is very frustrating to me. I'm a certified tobacco treatment specialist, and in the rates for Kentucky, we need an army of us. We have 5 in the state, and 4 of them work at the University of Kentucky. So this is a very frustrating situation. There's a joke that we have in Kentucky in public health when we talk about tobacco. We say, thank God for West Virginia. And they say that for us. Yay. Well, but we do we not just go back and forth? If we're 20 years, we've just gone back and forth with our statistics. It's very, very frustrating. So, but those are the things that basically, if we just said okay and didn't come up with a solution, they were going to kill our cessation program. And unfortunately, in a lot of areas in Kentucky, that's exactly what happened. There's 120 counties in Kentucky, and only about 15 to 20 of us are doing cessation now in a state with the nation's number 2 smoking rate. We've given up. Fortunately, my Board of Health and my commissioner was very supportive. They were very supportive of us saying, okay, go to it and see what you can do. And so my staff and I went after it, and this is what we came up with. In the meantime, the groups that came to us and said, we need help. And we said, okay, we'll try it. The African American churches, and we have 6 mission clinics in town that serve a vast number of people. We have a very somewhat linked to the University of Kentucky, but also just it's historical. We have a very active group of LGBT community, but also a large youth population of LGBT, and very disparate, very needy. A lot of homeless LGBT youth end up in Lexington. I don't quite know the history. Nobody seems to, but very, very high need group, low access. These are healthcare system avoiders too. So it's hard to get into that community. And then once as healthcare premium started to rise, we started getting a lot of businesses coming to us and saying, we can't afford healthcare anymore. Can you please help us with our workforces, because 45 to 50% of our 100 employees smoke. And then we also had a local NAMI chapter, which is that we had, that came to us and they said, we need help. So we said, well, we'll see what we can do. We'll try to be creative. So we had to think really fast. And this is kind of what we did. This was literally born out of a lot of sitting around at lunch, a lot of, well, let's try this, let's try that. This was sitting around with leaders from the group, from the community groups, and saying, do you think this will work? Do you think that will work? And looking at data and data and data and data from these groups. And it was frustrating because we would look at the data and we would go to the community leaders of these groups and they'd say, that data doesn't mean anything to us. This is what we know. And what we did is we tried a few things. My background originally was in HIV and STI, so I had some credibility with the LGBT group. We scraped together a few grants that I literally wrote within a couple of weeks. I had an LGBT group, and because I had worked in that population so long, I had credibility. So I did 2 very quick cessation classes. I had 8 in one group and 7 in another group, and I had 100% graduation in both of those classes. And so I said, we may be onto something. So I recruited those community leaders, and we continue to work with them. So this is how we redesigned our cessation model, because we knew we couldn't do it anymore. We needed their help, and that's why I put that on the title. So what we did, we asked them, we said, what do you need? And that's what they told us. So they need affordable nicotine replacement. There's nothing that's more critical than that, even though, honestly, it's still cheaper, the nicotine replacement. We knew that we had to be able to provide that, and it had to be affordable. Luckily, we have a very good contract, and we can get it for much cheaper. We needed our cessation, they needed our cessation expertise. We're the ones who know how to help people stop smoking. We want the data, and we also wanted to provide the quality assurance. We wanted the quality to stay very high. We did not want the cessation program that we knew that worked when it was delivered properly. We did not want that to leave. And we wanted to encourage them and kind of hold their hand, because it's very intimidating to provide a 12-week cessation program if you've never done it before. You know, the first time I stood in front of a group of 50 people who were trying to quit smoking, and I'd never smoked in my life before, I thought they were going to throw me out of the room. It can be very hostile. And also they needed training. So what we decided to do was we went into these groups, and we said the first time through, we actually taught the class, and we asked them to help us, and that we co-taught with them. And so they were gatekeepers, and they helped us get into the groups. And it seemed to work pretty well, and we kind of helped them along so it wasn't so intimidating. And then we switched places. The second time through, they taught it, and we supported it. They provided an open class. They opened their – and so we needed a place to provide the classes. They opened their buildings. The biggest thing that they provided was they brought people to the classes. They provided it, and they got people in the seats for our classes. And then they provided staff. The benefits I've already talked about – they provided us access, and it was really cool because they're beginning to take ownership of the classes. They're saying, these are our classes. And I assure you, they are doing a much better job than we ever could have. And the biggest thing is the last box. It increases our capacity, and it allows us to operate and to function at the top of our training so that we can do more. Because they're much better at it than we ever would be, because those are their communities. Funding, I've talked about how we do it. They pay for it, Medicaid. And another cool thing that we've done is sponsorships. We had a mission clinic come to us, and it was interesting because it's actually a church that I'm familiar with in town. It was my church. They said, we have $4,000. We want to help people stop smoking. What can you do? What can we do? I said, you can buy nicotine replacement. So I pre-ordered a bunch of patches, $4,000 worth of patches. And so for over 2 years, I would get regular shipments of the nicotine replacement, and we would just use it on whoever needed it, whoever couldn't pay. It's worked fantastically. And so now we have a church who will say, well, here's $500, here's $2,000, and that's how we're facilitating, and that's how we're making these classes happen. I cringe to put this slide up because I hate one of the columns, and you can see which column I hate. It's the numbers. They are so very tiny. But you have to start somewhere, right? I love the next column because our success rates were so high. This is 1 year. This is the past calendar year. And you can see the one box I don't like is the one that says Community College Wave 2. If it says Wave 2, that means that the community partners are facilitating it. That's a 30% rate. We begged them, please cancel the class because we missed the 4 weeks of the class because January of 2014 in Kentucky was extremely cold, record-breaking cold and snow. We have the classes at night. You do not want people who are medically fragile and older out at night. It was very dangerous. We had a lot of ice. And they said, no, we're not going to cancel it. You can see what happened to our graduation rate. We actually canceled our class that we were and came back in the spring and came up with an 83% graduation rate. We're very proud of these completion rates. Now we're just trying to work on getting the numbers up. So what we learned, it's hard to keep the QA up, very hard. We love data. We're public health people. We need that data to say, yes, what we're doing is worthy. We need funding, and we need to keep doing this. It works very well. But our community partners aren't so worried about it. They're worried about, can we get our church member who has COPD and has been an elder in the church for 35 years and has had 2 bad lung biopsies, can we help that person stop smoking? We don't care about your data as much as, or how many people are in that class as much. Can we help this person get better? You're dead in the water if you don't help them with a nicotine replacement. It's not going to be perfect. Sometimes you have to just take what you can get and go. I spent a year and a half trying to arrange one of these classes. I wanted everything to be perfect, and I said, at one of the mission clinics, and I said, okay, we can't do this. We can't go. They were ready to go, and they wanted to go. And I said, let's go. And my co-author, Dustin, actually taught the class or helped them with the class. The last day of class, they were tearing the building down. They went into the building. It was very cold. It was 20-something degrees outside. The class met, and there was no furniture. There was no heat. They barely had electricity. But that class had a very high graduation rate because those people were committed, and it was community-supported. They literally tore the building down the next day. But it was their community. They owned it. That's where they wanted to do it. I said, you're not ready. They said, yes, we are. And they made it happen. So I was very impressed by that. Community partnerships are very fickle. They're very fragile. And you have to work with that. You have to massage it, and you have to say, you know, yes, whatever you want. You cannot draw the lines for them. Don't underestimate logistics, what'll happen to you. Things like buildings being torn down in freak snowstorms, because they'll get you. And one of the other things that happened, the class actually that we just finished, we're going to have a celebration next Tuesday. We had spent 2 years training an elder in a church of 2,000 people, and he was very excited. And 4 days before the class started in August, he unexpectedly passed away. So those are the kind of things logistically challenged too. So I'm the tobacco staff, so guess who got to go teach the class unexpectedly? So it has worked out. I only lost one person in the class, but those are the kind of things that you really have to make contingency plans for. Where we want to go for it with it, we're going to try to keep going with it because it seems to work. We need to get our numbers up. We need to do some more education and promotion of why you should come to our class and not use an e-cigarette. We're waiting for data on pushing that, and that's a nationwide trend too. We want to push our entire community cessation program to this because we do not have capacity. And we know that this is actually working a lot better. And basically what we're trying to do is move to a community health worker model. At the work site, we're also doing this. And one of the things we're pushing our employers to do is to offer this because it's very exciting. We have a whole other model we're doing at work sites. But we're really trying to push and really, really pushing our work sites. Okay, you're providing cessation for your workers and your employees, and that's very effective, but you're doing it to provide, to save money. We get that. But we want a public health goal in there, too. Pay for their families, your family members, your adult children, your spouses. So, and that's working very well, and that's another plan we're working on. And we want to start doing some return on investment analyses. That's something we haven't even begun to approach because it's very complicated. But really, our major goal is to just provide more cessation for community members through these partnerships and to free our staff to concentrate on what we can do better, which is secure funding and to push us to be the very best cessation experts that we can be, because our cessation rates in Kentucky are very dismal. And we have a lot of work to do and to empower our community partners. I really don't like the word empower, but our community partners are gold, and they have much more power than we will ever have because this is their community. And we need to support them and help them be brave, because it is very, very challenging to do this. On our very best day, we will stand in front of a group of cessation, a group that's coming to us for cessation, and on your very best day, you know that you will lose 50% of them. And that is very intimidating. And so we need to help them have their very best day and say, you did a fantastic job. How can we do it again? So we certainly welcome any questions and advice and experiences you've had in your communities, because one of the things I always like to say is we have a lot of work to do. So, thank you. But that stuff is starting to happen.
coming, the relapse rate might be higher, you know.
It all just depends on what happens with our funding. You know, I don't know what happens at this point. We've had some great success with grant writing, so if we can continue with that, I don't like relying on grant funding because it can make your team crazy, and you're always chasing that grant. I think it's very frustrating. But, I mean, in 18 months, my program's going to be dead. We're going to have no funding, so I'm trying to stay ahead of that curve. I don't want to lose this model because it's working, and some other health departments in our state are beginning to adopt it. So, is there any first? I'm not a
Virginia fan. I don't think those numbers were that bad. Speaking from experience,
I'm used to my fifth. Yeah,
more than zero. So
yes.
Anyway, can you say something about what kind of cessation class or program model you were using?
Sure. We use the 12-week cessation model, which is. That's a really long time, let me tell you. But we have a cessation model that came out of University of Kentucky, and it's a three-pronged program that provides social support, nicotine replacement therapy, and education, and it's done by a facilitator. Some of the best facilitators I've ever seen are lay facilitators. One of the very best I've ever seen doesn't even have a high school education. She's phenomenal. And so every week there's a different lesson, like stress, weight gain, you know, the aspects of stopping smoking, and you, there's a DVD that's played in discussion, and then a little lesson. One of the things I did was we took the written materials, because I felt like they were too complicated. I have a background in health communication, so everything that goes out, I have very high standards for, and I need it for a lower reading level. We brought the reading level down, and we made it a toolkit, and we made it very user-friendly, and so when they get it, we put it in a binder, a very thin binder, and so it's very, very user friendly. But it is 12 long weeks, and we CO test every other week. We try to. Sometimes it gets very cumbersome.